Welcome back to the program. Don't forget, top of the hour, Mike Rupp from the NHL Network will stop by. George Richards of Florida Hockey Now. We'll talk about the Ben Chiarot deal. One of two whoppers last night. The other sees Calle Yarncroke go from the Seattle Kraken to the Calgary Flames. Flames general manager Brad Treliving joins me now. Brad, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I was so I was on with Pat Steinberg the other day, and one of the questions was, if you're Brad Treliving, what do you do right now? And my answer was something along the lines of, well, first of all, it was a word salad. Second of all, it was along the lines of, if I was Brad Treliving, I'd be really sensitive about touching anything with this lineup. This Flames team is quite spectacular, as you well know, and I'd be sensitive about disrupting anything. Before you made this deal with Seattle, how much thought went into, man, we're right there, this lineup is awesome, maybe the best thing I can do is just back up? Did that go through your mind at all here?
Yeah, I mean, you're always, Jeff, you're always sensitive to chemistry, you know, especially this time of the year when everybody, you know, everybody's clamoring with, you know, make a move and add. And the thing you have to keep in mind is, you know, it's great to add a player, but you have to look at it and say, okay, that player's coming in. Whose job is he taking? And how much better are you with the new guy coming in? And, you know, is it worth the residual effect of knocking a guy, you know, down or out or whatever the case may be? So you're always sensitive to it. One of the things we felt in Callie's situation, a little bit like Tyler when we brought him in, is we feel there's some, you know, there's some relationships and some familiarity that Callie has with some of our players that I think is going to make the transition a lot easier. You know, I used the analogy last night of saying, you know, in anybody's, you know, anybody out there, their walk of life, you know what it's like when you go to a new job. It feels a lot better when you walk into the office for the first time and you know a bunch of people in the cubicles and you feel more comfortable and it just feels a lot easier. Rather than walking in with the "Hello, my name is Jeff" sign on your shirt and you're trying to meet everybody for the first time. So I think that's going to help. We also felt that you can never have too much depth. And really with the ability of Callie to play a whole bunch of positions, to come in and say you're plugging him in here, right here, isn't necessarily, you know, the case. We feel that he can come in and we can try him in a couple different spots. You know, he gives us more depth down the middle. He gives us more depth on the wing. You know, he's a real smart, good two-way player, and I think he's going to help us. So certainly a long way of saying, yeah, we do pay attention, as you noted, to chemistry and mix, but we just felt that you know, the positives of adding a good player were worth doing.
So the one of the things that I'm always curious about, Brad, is, you know, what is the part of the deal that got the deal done? And in this case, you guys gave up a second round pick, a third round pick, and a seventh as well. And there were other teams trying to get Calle Yarncroke. Like, what you offered put this deal over the top? Like, was it, hey, we were the only ones willing to also throw in the third? Was it the second? Like, what was the one thing specifically that put Calgary over the top in this deal with Seattle?
Well, I'm not sure. That's probably a better question for Ron, as he knows what the market was for him out there. You know, we sort of, you know, you're always looking at precedents and trying to stay within the marketplace. And, you know, when we first started looking at Cali, the Janmark deal last year, when Janmark went to Vegas, was, you know, something we framed around this deal, you know, which was a second and a third, and then that player had a double cut where he was retained at the, you know, for the first team, they moved him to a second team, retained again. So, and then there was a fifth round pick that went as part of that. So we sort of framed that deal in terms of the cost of this deal. Ronnie's a good man. He did a good job. He was a pirate as usual, trying to extort as much as he could. And he did a good job of that. You know, for us to make the deal, we had to have 50% retention. You know, and that, I think he had the price of his second and third, you know, the kicker of the seventh for the retention, you know, did that, did that push it over? You know, that's probably a better question for Ronnie.
You know, it's funny you mentioned, you use the term pirate, and, you know, Brian Burke always, and you have, of course, an association with Burke, he always says there's no more pirates left anymore. Everybody tries to do deals that help each other. Once upon a time, if you shook hands with a GM, you had to count your fingers after you were done. Do pirates still exist in the NHL, Brad?
Yeah, well, it's a competitive business. I don't know if there's any of that. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, everybody's trying to do what's best for their organization, but, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, a deal's got to work for both sides or it's not going to happen. You know, that's sure. Always the joke you have here. I used to do it with Don Maloney when I was an assistant manager with him in Arizona. You know, there's the normal deal, and then there's the typical assistant GM deal. Go phone this guy and ask him for this, and this, and we'll give him that. And he'd say, well, you make the call, you know. So, hey, you're always trying to do what's best, but, I mean, you have to be cautious and conscious about what, you always ask the question, why would the other side look at this? You know, what's in it for them? So, it's a smart group up there. You're not pulling the wool over anybody's eyes, and, you know, at the end of the day, I always think of the best deal is the deal that works for both sides. So, you know, we got a good player, that hopefully is going to help us down the stretch here. And who knows whether, you know, he's on an expiring contract. Who knows if we can get something done with him. That's a discussion for another day. And Ronnie gets, you know, he gets some picks to help him in the future. So mm-hmm. I think it's something that both sides can be happy about.
You know, whether it was this deal or the Tyler Toffoli deal, I think one of the things that people look at, maybe with some shock too, is, you know, Connor Zary is still in the organization. So is Jacob Pelche. So is, you know, Yusuf Alamaki. So is Dustin Wolf. Like, going into, and again, maybe I shouldn't assume that we're done either. I know you call on a lot of players, but going into this deadline, how much of it was a priority to keep, you know, Zary and Pelche and Wolf, et cetera, to keep your prize prospects?
Yeah, you work hard to get those guys, and you know, a lot of those guys are having really good seasons in Stockton. Our American League team is having a really good year. They've taken real big steps development. You've invested in those kids for a couple of years, and, you know, you never know how it's going to go, right? Especially when you're looking to add, you know, there's, you know, if you're looking to add, it comes at a cost. You know, you don't just get players for free. That being said, you know, you hate moving draft capital, but that was sort of our strategy going into this. Is, you know, if we could add to our team and keep the team intact, meaning we didn't want to necessarily take anybody off our team. And then keep that young core of prospects together, then, you know, the capital we were prepared to use was going to be, you know, the draft choices and trying to use as much from the 22 draft as we possibly could. So that was, you know, a few weeks ago when you sort of set up your game plan, that was what we wanted to do. And thus far we've been able to accomplish it, but, you know, we get lots of calls on those young guys because they're good young players. So, you know, we're looking forward to having them as part of our group here at some point too.
With Brad Treliving, general manager of the Calgary Flames. This has been a remarkable season for Calgary. And, you know, I consider, you know, it seemed like, you know, 5 minutes ago we were watching, you know, a lot of, you know, Vancouver, Calgary, empty calorie games playing down the stretch. And it was tough, like, for everybody involved. And, you know, heading into this season, I'm not sure what your expectations were, but one of the things that you did was, as much as people around you and online, everywhere saying, tear it down, you went the complete other direction. What did you see in your team in the off season after what was a disappointing season last year? What did you see in your team that led you to believe that maybe even something like this was possible?
Well, you're right, Jeff. It was a really difficult year, and to top it off, it was a difficult ending. You know, we talked about that the other day. To sort of spike the ball, we were playing games at the end of the year against Vancouver. We're both out of it, and their wild playoff games are going on. So,
yeah,
it was as you know, depressing as you could, environment as you could be in. But, you know, we stepped back at the end of the year and really took a hard look and said, listen, you know, at the end of the day, you're always looking over the summer of how you get better. But, you know, the narrative of, oh, let's just blow it up, you know, I don't believe in that. We had good players. We had good players. And I think, and listen, everybody went through it. But I really, like, we had a really good year in 18-19. And we, you know, then the 19-20 season, we beat Winnipeg in a bubble playoff. And I thought we were having a good series, and we kind of imploded against Dallas. And then, you know, we had the year where we were all in the bubble, and it was just a hard year. I thought it especially hit our team hard. I thought some of our guys, it really weighed on them, and whether it be on the ice, off the ice, I just felt we weren't ourselves, and that's not the right time to, you know, they didn't become any bad players overnight, and so I just felt that this was a really good, I believe in the core of this group, we've had them together for a long time, we took a step back to say, let's work around the edges here to add some experience and insulate them, and maybe bring some people that have gone through the playoff wars before, and is there specific roles, supporting roles that we can go out and fill. And then the biggest, you know, to me, the biggest X factor for us was having a full year with Darryl. And, you know, I saw what Darryl was able to do with this team in a short period of time. We didn't qualify for the playoffs last year, but we changed how we played. And it takes a little bit of time, and having a full training camp and having him, you know, with this group, I thought it was the best chance. You know, I said at the time we made the change that what Darryl is strong at and what his, you know, his best traits are is exactly what I think this group needs. So having a full year with them, I felt that there was a chance that we could, you know, we could have some success. And so hats off to Darryl, hats off to the group. They're the ones that have done it. And we have not accomplished anything at this point. We've got a long way to go. But certainly, it you know, they've rebounded from what was a tough season last year.
Are you done now?
You know, that's a good question, Jeff. I mean, I think for the most part, the heavy lifting is done.
Yep.
But we've got, you know, 4 days or whatever it is to the deadline here. We'll continue to poke around and see what's, you know, going back to your initial question, you don't do deals just to do deals. You know, is there other things that we can kind of look at? Sure, which we will. We've got a limited cap supply right now, so we'll have to have Chris Snow figure out how he comes up with a few more pesos for us to get out there. Mm-hmm. But we'll poke around here and see where we get to by Monday. But I would anticipate that a lot of the heavy lifting is done.
Last question for you, Brad. The trade deadline is, of course, as we all know, March 21st. What does Brad Treliving do on March 22nd?
Recharges his phone. you know, then you kind of, it's interesting at that point, you know, you take a deep breath, you kind of put your, you've got your, this is the group that you're going with. So, I'll probably, you know, I'll be with here for a bit, and I plan on getting down to, be around our Stockton team for a little bit, get out to the top prospects game's going on. We have a GM meeting. So a little bit after that, you can get out. I find you can get out and scout a little bit more.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, there's not a whole lot other. You turn into a pretty big cheerleader at that point after the deadline. So we'll get out and see Stockton and maybe see some of our young prospects in college and junior at that point.
Well, listen, an exciting couple of days here still to come. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy trade deadline as much as a general manager can. Enjoy seeing Stockton. Enjoy seeing the top prospects in Kitchener as well. We'll catch up real soon. Thanks so much for doing this, Brad.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Thanks for having me on. Have a good day.
Brad Treliving is the general manager of the Calgary Flames. Yesterday, pulling off of one of two big deals around the NHL yesterday. Well, I should say three as well, because, you know, let's not, you know, full respect to Frank Vetrano, who's now a member of the New York Rangers. That opened up cap space to bring in Ben Chiarot to the Florida Panthers. But yesterday, Brad Treliving in the Calgary Flames picking up Kelly Yarncroak from the Seattle Kraken. Seattle retains 50%. Going the other way, a second, a third, and a seventh. The second is this season's draft, the third next year's, and the seventh in 2024. As Elliot reported in his most recent blog, both the Los Angeles Kings and the Washington Capitals believed to be interested in Kelly Yarncroak. And interesting that the entire deal was modeled after the Matthias Janmark deal. So interesting there. Okay, let's reset here. Lots going on around the NHL as teams get themselves set for a trade deadline. Going to talk to Mike Rupp here in a couple of moments from the NHL Network. We'll get his reaction to the trades yesterday. We should park a little bit more time as well to talk about the Claude Giroux situation. It does seem very much as if Owen Tippett will be part of any deal. Owen Tippett has been, I reported this on Hockey Night, I think it was a couple of months ago, the Florida Panthers have made him available. Playing with Charlotte in the American Hockey League, I don't think he'll play many, if any, more games until a trade deadline for Charlotte. Look for him to be moved. By the way, he was the AHL's Player of the Week last week, so we'll throw that in there as well. We'll get Mike Rupp's reaction to the Claude Giroux situation and what's on the horizon. Also, should probably get his thoughts on someone who, when I think of what type of hockey player Mike Rupp would love in the NHL right now, like specifically what type of player would Rupper like, I come back to someone who Elliot and I spoke to on the 32 Thoughts podcast a couple of days ago, podcast just released yesterday, and that is Nashville's Tanner Jeannot. I have a feeling, again, just my spidey sense on this one, that if you know how Mike Rupp played and you know the style of hockey that Mike Rupp enjoys, I'm guessing he's a fan of Tanner Jeannot. We'll get his thoughts on the Nashville rookie, play some of our interview with Tanner Jeannot coming up in the next hour, and then we'll get on the Florida Panthers page. George Richards from Florida Hockey Now. We know this is a go-for-it year for the Florida Panthers. We've known this for a while. We just talked to Brad Treliving about the Calgary Flames and the season they're having. Look at the season the Florida Panthers are having right now, and they're adding. Added Ben Chiarot yesterday. We believe that, you know, Claude Giroux is on the way. Tonight, Giroux is poised to play his 1,000th game in the NHL. It's important to him that he does it as a Philadelphia Flyer, and then he can become a member of another team. And it seems as if all indications are and all arrows are pointing towards the Florida Panthers. So we'll talk to George Richards about what's happening in Florida right now. And by the way, it's just great in the last couple of seasons to see the Florida Panthers as a legitimate powerhouse in the NHL and competitive hockey team. I loved that playoff series last year between Tampa and Florida. I think we're all on the same page. We want to see that again and again and again. Florida Panthers hot. We'll talk about Mike Rupp, or to Mike Rupp rather. We'll hear from Tanner Jeannot in the 32 Thoughts podcast, and George Richards all still to come. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The biggest stories in Toronto sport. The Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Still to come, George Richards from Florida Hockey Now. We'll talk about the exciting Florida Panthers, exciting on the ice and off as well. Yesterday, making the move for Ben Chiarot, picking him up from the Montreal Canadiens, going the other way. Quite a haul. First-round draft pick, prospect, Ty Smilanek, and a fourth-rounder. St. Louis and Carolina also interested in the services of the veteran defenseman. George Richards joins us bottom of the hour. We'll talk about the Florida Panthers. We should probably park some time and talk about Claude Giroux. And we'll do the same with Mike Rupp of the NHL Network, former NHLer and Stanley Cup champion. Rupper, how are you today?
Doing well, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, I've always wanted to ask you. I tend to ask this a lot of ex-NHLers. You've probably been asked this a million times, but just humor me. Now, you played in the NHL for a number of years, played with a number of teams. I've always associated you most with the New Jersey Devils, and that's probably because of the Stanley Cup. But also, you know, played with the Coyotes and briefly with the Blue Jackets and the Rangers and the Wild as well. Was there ever a team that you always wanted to play for, whether it was like a fantasy as a kid, or you just thought, you know, just wondered, you know, what it would feel like to pull the jersey over my head? Was there one team like that for you, or, you know, did you do it?
You know, it's kind of funny you ask that because I don't really say it too much, but it's kind of my the thing that I've done on this side of the media where I've been very outspoken. You know, listen, I'm going to call things down the middle. If there's a team that I don't care for from my playing days, I'm certainly not going to hold that grudge. If there's something good to be said about them, I'm going to say something good. But if there's something to be said bad, I'm going to really lay into them. And I was born and raised pretty much in, as far as a professional in what's now the Metro Division. I drafted by the Islanders, played for the Devils, played for the Penguins, played for the Rangers. The one team I've been groomed to hate, it's the Flyers. I hate the Flyers. I had to, you know what I mean? For the way I played, I had to. So yeah. Flyers fans would know, even on NHL Network, like I lay into them quite often. But truth be told, I always wanted to be a Philadelphia Flyer. Maybe that contributes to it. So I remember during my teen years, and that was the big boy era, right? So I thought me being 6'5", 230 when I was 19 years old, that it was like that. I was a big Legion of Doom fan. I had two posters over my bed as a kid. One was kind of a random one, but I was a big Sean Kemp fan. I had him in Seattle nice. over my bed. And then I had a poster of the Legion of Doom. And I loved it. I love Lindros, LeClaire, Renberg. Oh. I wanted to be a Flyer. I remember when we had our meetings before, you know, pre-draft meetings where you're meeting with teams, I went into Philly and went to the practice rink. And I remember they took me in the practice locker room. And I remember seeing those guys' stalls. And I was like, I want to be a Flyer. Like, this city appreciates big boy hockey. And that's what I want to ultimately be. But it never worked out that way. And, hey, maybe that's part of it, right? I got this little beef with never being able to fulfill that dream. But I always wanted to be a Philadelphia Flyer.
Listen, when I consider how you played, it kind of fits hand to glove rubber. And is it just me and I've always felt this way, like growing up, ever since as a kid, and I watched the Broad Street Bullies and going right through, you know, the 80s with that team, with that amazing defense corps and goaltenders like Pelle Lindbergh and Ron Hextall. And then right into the, as you mentioned, the Legion of Doom era. I don't know what it was, whether it was an optical illusion or just something in my head. But did it not seem that when you put on the Flyers jersey, every player grew? Like, they all looked bigger wearing the Flyers jersey. Is that just me? Is that just my goofy brain? Or was that optical illusion true for you, too?
No, it is true. I mean, it's true when you're playing against them, too, because it's like, you know, don't get me wrong. There was plenty of years where, you know, I kind of, excuse me, over my NHL career, I kind of had to evolve into being more physical, more fighting. But when I came in the league, that wasn't me. I was viewed as a center that skated really well for my size and can kind of contribute a little bit on both sides of the puck, more so defensively. But you know, it eventually got to the point where we'd be going into Philly and they had some really tough teams. And I was kind of, we didn't really have a lot of tough guys. My first year in New Jersey, yeah, we had a really tough team. But after that, in the years that my second return back to New Jersey after I kind of bounced around a little bit, we didn't really have an overly tough team. So I was kind of like the token guy who had to go out and fight. And I fought like
that's
every
hard.
Single time we played the Flyers.
That's hard,
yeah,
man.
So it's like,
that's hard.
I kind of had, yeah, it's like, you know, you're looking around and you're like, well, I guess it's me. So I go out there and fight. And so I guess my point is that even since then, there's this thing that you mentioned and it's like, everybody always considers, you can say Boston the same way. Everybody says big, bad Bruins. Everyone thinks Flyers. They want this rough and tumble hockey. And I think they actually are trying to get back to that to some degree right now. Mm-hmm. But there's plenty of years where they didn't play a big, tough style of hockey. Neither did the Boston Bruins in a few years after they won in 11. And it's like the narrative is because it was such a demonstrative way that those two organizations played once upon a time. It's carried on. So it's like you're going in there and the boys are like, we're expecting like this big team. It's like, whoa, this team's not tougher than us. You know what I mean? Like, this team's not like, this is our style. Like, let's take our style to them, you know? And I think that's something that's always existed. You automatically think that those two teams play that style. And I think it's just because we saw that way played so successfully for both organizations for a long time.
You know, let me circle back to something you said there, because it really resonated with me. And that's why I said, man, that's a hard way to do it. Like when you mentioned, like, you become just the designated guy, like you're the only one on the team. And I always, you know, whenever I hear things like that, Rupper, I always think about Keith Magnuson, the late Keith Magnuson with the Chicago Blackhawks, who, you know, in the era where everybody was loading up with nuclear deterrence, Chicago left it all to him. Like, he was the only guy, and it didn't matter how many times, like, he would like lose on a regular basis. I always felt bad, but he was always the guy that had to answer the bell. Like in that era where it was Schultz and Selesky and Terry O'Reilly and, you know, Nystrom and Gillies, and there was Keith Magnuson as the only guy. And I always felt bad for him. Like, man, this has got to be a really hard way to make a living here.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes in those situations too, it's on the job training. Like, I wasn't prepared to do it. You know what I mean? So it was like you just kind of go out there and learn. I remember there was a number of years there where it was, you know, and a lot of times, even though with my size, there's a lot of fights I lost, like a lot of fights, you know, and you just have to learn. I mean, when you go into a fight and the guy starts, I remember distinctly, I was actually playing against the Flyers in preseason, and I was trying to make the Devils, and they had Jim Vandermeer. And he was, you know, tough as nails, both Vandermeer brothers, tough as nails. And Jim's a lefty. And I never really fought a lefty. I mean, I fought in junior in the OHL, but I never really had to deal with a lefty. So I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to go and do my thing. I went and just got pummeled. And so we were in the penalty box. We came out of the penalty box. And I remember it was, again, preseason game, and I went right on him again, and he pummeled me again. And I'm like, I gotta learn how to fight lefties. And then, so, you know, over time, I just started trying to fight lefties more, and because I didn't obviously want to lose. And it eventually became a strength of mine to fight lefties. But it was just something where I think that's the tough part. It wasn't that, hey, I had to be the token tough guy to stand up here. It's that I didn't really know how to do it. And that was the scary part, right? Those are the parts where you're not sleeping in pregame skate and doing these things. So it eventually got to a point where you feel good about it, and you feel comfortable about protecting yourself. And once you can protect yourself, then you can go out there and do your thing.
You know, speaking of lefties, there's a story. Oh, man. There's a story that I heard. This is years ago. So this would have been when Kevin Dineen was playing in Hartford. And it was a preseason game against the Buffalo Sabres. And young kid, you know, pulls up to Dineen at the draw. You know, hey, Mr. Dineen, you know, I'm trying to impress the coach. You know, will you do me the honors? And Dineen's like, it's preseason, kid. I'm not doing this. Oh, Mr. Dineen, I really appreciate it. You know, I'm really trying to impress, you know, Mr. Muckler. Could you think you'd do me the honor? And Dineen finally says, okay, well, tell you what, though, kid. Let's just throw lefts. And so they drop the gloves, and Dineen just, like, lights them up, Christmas tree. And the kid's there. They serve their five. They go back to the bench, and Muckler goes over to the kid and says, "You know, Kevin Dineen's a lefty, right?"
Oh, that's unbelievable. That's so good. You know, I have two quick stories if you got time for them. As far as kind of going through that in fighting, I remember this is one that it was early on. I was a rookie, and so my first NHL game, it was on my birthday. I got called up on January 13th, and the way that works, like you don't know if you're going to play one game, two. You don't know if this will be the only game, right? So, and I was always taught in junior hockey, just make the score sheet. Just make the score sheet. That was that kind of narrative that you always had, right? Yep. So, first NHL game, I had two goals, and I got a third that was disallowed because I had a high stick on the play. And so I was like, all right, cool. I bought myself another game, right? Like, I know I'm going to play another game. The next game comes along. I pick up a nice assist. All right, made the score sheet. Third game comes along. I get my first NHL fight against Aaron Asham because, offensively, nothing was coming away. But anyways, you start going, and so it starts extending up to like 10 games, 11 games. Now, I'm not an offensive producer, so, you know, if it's about making the score sheet, guess what I have to pretty much resort to? Some of those things, right? So as far as trying to get in a scrap. So I remember we were playing out in the old barn in Phoenix. And my line mates at the time, I had talked about some lethal weapons on my line. I had I was centering Jim McKenzie and Turner Stevenson. And these guys were just like, hey, just go out there and do your thing. You do whatever you want to do. Ignite whatever you want to ignite. We got you. And I was very secure with those guys. Those guys are awesome. So we're in Phoenix. And again, same thing. It's like whenever you see someone that's 6'5", that's an automatic target, especially when they don't know if you fight, right? So I have like smaller guys at times that are trying to challenge you because it looks good for them to fight me because they know that I'm not really a fighter. So in this situation, I'm sitting at the end of the bench, and the glass to separate us from the Coyotes bench is right next to me. And the next player over happens to be Brad May. And so all of a sudden I hear a little dunk, dunk, dunk on the glass with the end of his stick. And the play's going on, and I look over to him, and he leans back and speaks between the crack of the glass, and he goes, "Hey kid, yeah." He goes, "Hey kid, you fight?" And I kind of go, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, "I got to make the score sheet. Got to make the score sheet." So I go, I'm like, I will fight. And he's like, "All right, cool." He's like, "Next shift." I'm like, "All right." So I'm sitting there, and I'm like going through my head now. I'm like, All I know is Rick Jenneret's Mayday call. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Like a Mayday. I know he's tough. You know, I don't know if he's a righty. I don't know if he's a lefty. And I turn to Jimmy McKenzie next to me, and I go, "Jimmy," I'm like, "Brad May just asked me to fight." And I told him, "Yeah, I don't know. Is he a lefty? Like, what? Can you give me any pointers here?" And Jimmy Mack goes, "Rupper, you're not fighting him right now. We're winning 1-0. Pat Burns is the coach. He goes, Burnsy's going to kill you if you go and fight right now." And I'm like, "Oh, what do I do?" I told him, yeah. And he goes, "Tell him no." I'm like, "All right." So I go out there for the shift, and we go out and up for the draw. And Maisie's like, let's go, kid. And I'm like, "Hey, buddy, I can't. I'm like, I'm just trying to make it in this league. I'm like, I promise you in the third period, if this game is under control or whatever, I'll go you, I promise." And so he asks me a little bit later in the period again. And so eventually Brad May leans in on the draw. We had like TV timeout, and he goes, "All right, here's what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm getting traded. I don't know what's going on. I haven't been playing. I got to do something. So I'm going to look like I'm initiating a fight. You don't have to fight, kid. I get it. But I'm going to show something here." And I'm like, "All right, cool." So on the draw starts, he starts just putting cross checks in my ribs, and he's just hammering into me like, "Let's go, let's go, let's go." And all of a sudden I'm sitting there, and I'm like, "No, I'm getting shown up. I want to stay. I'm not going to show I'm afraid of this guy." So then all of a sudden I just grab my stick, and I just two-hand him right across his like skate laces, and I almost broke my stick. And then we just kind of stop and look at each other. He's like, "Oh, so like, are we doing this or what?" We were both like confused. Like, are we still acting now? Are we still doing this? So I remember from that moment on, we ended up not fighting. But after the game, I go to Jimmy Mack. I'm like, "Jimmy, is this normal? Like, how is," he's like, "I've never heard of that in my life. I've never seen that." So all the people out there that think fighting's fake, maybe in that one moment it was fake, but yeah, it never is fake after that.
I remember Mayday told me the story about, you know, offering invitations. When he played in Niagara with the Thunder, Bill LaForge, the legend, the late legend Bill LaForge, who was never shy about any of this, and Louis DeBrusque told me about it too. When Louis played with the London Knights, there was one game, Niagara and London, where DeBrusque was in the penalty box and Mayday skated over to the box with a letter, like a note that was written from Bill LaForge. It says, "Here, my coach wants you to read this." And inside it was, "As soon as you step out of this bleeping penalty box, you're going to fight Brad May." It was a letter sent by the coach into the penalty box telling him he's going to fight Brad May when he comes out of the box.
So good. I mean, those stories are crazy. Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, I fought Sean Thornton one time on a ship, and Sean Thornton was an interesting one because we fought a number of times. And anybody talks to, you talk about Sean Thornton, everybody raves about him as a human being, right? Amazing guy, awesome teammate,
yes,
all those things. And he was so nice on the ice. I mean, he was a gamer. He was tough as nails. He'd fight all the time. But he was so nice that it started playing mind games with me because he'd skate in the corner, and if I was like fielding the puck off the wall on the rim, he'd come in. He's like, heads up, I'm coming. And I'm like, what? Like, he could have lit me up. And he's like, let me know. So then I line up on face-offs, and he was always like, how's it going, buddy? You know, this and that. And I started like backing off of my draws. I'm like, this dude's trying to suck me in and just like, he's going to jump me and just beat me up, you know? Yeah. So what ends up happening, I have a shift, and I'm just running around. We're in New Jersey playing against Boston. I finish a hit in the corner. The puck goes down low. I run the defense down there. The puck goes over to the other wall. I run that. I'm just running around on each side of the ice. So all of a sudden, Thornton jumps on the ice, and he gives me a whack. He's like, we're going. At this point, I'm buckled. I'm actually going for a line change. So I'm like halfway going to the bench, and he gives me a little whack, like, we're like, let's go. And we drop the gloves, and I say to him as we're standing there, or he says to me, I should say, I know this is the end of your shift. You can take a second if you want. And I'm like, okay. And so I remember I put my hands on both. If you look up the fight, like, I put my hands on my knees, and I'm bending over, and we're just like, yeah. I'm trying to catch my breath. And he's like, I'm like, yeah, just give me a few seconds. He's like, take your time. So we're just like circling around. And during this time, he's like, so what do you want to do? You want to go lefts or rights? And I'm like, I just want to catch my breath. And we end up getting a good little scrap in there. So I give him a lot of respect because he was a guy, nothing was ever cheap. It was just straightforward toughness with Sean Thornton.
So I've got a Sean Thornton. We're going to go story for story. So I've got a Sean Thornton story. So I don't know. Are you a big UFC guy at all, Repper?
I like watching it. I don't really follow like the names, though. Yes.
Okay. So Sean Pearson is a former UFC welterweight. He's a good buddy of mine. We live across the street from each other. I just live down the road here, and our kids play hockey. I've known Sean for a long time. Anyway, so Sean Pearson is playing men's league, and Sean Thornton's on the team. And so, you know, Pierce has had like 7 UFC fights. So, you know, everyone's trying to take runs at the UFC guys. So one guy just splashes him up against the glass, right? And right away, Thornton comes in to handle the guy. Like, you're not doing that. And then they're in the dressing room afterwards. My buddy Pearson goes over to Thornton and is like, hey, man, like, hey, I really appreciate that. Like, thank you. But, you know, I kind of do this for a living. Like, I can kind of take care of myself. Like, I've had 7 fights in the UFC. And Thornton, great line. Thornton stands up and goes, no, dude, no, you don't understand. That's on the ice. That's my fight. Now we're going to the bar. If there's any problems, it's your fight.
That's a great exchange, because you know what, there's no consequences sometimes fighting on the ice. There's a lot of consequences fighting at the bar, so that's a good deal.
Yes, sir. So that's man, we spent a lot of time here. We got to hustle, but hey, listen, let me ask you one thing about actual hockey going on right now. You mentioned Philly a couple of seconds ago. How do you see this Claude Giroux situation? Not necessarily the trade, but I wanted to ask you about the phenomenon of, it's like the slow motion breakup. Like, we've known about this for so long now, and we're close, and there'll be the pregame and the 1000s game, and then we all know what's going to happen, you know, as soon as tomorrow. And we're seeing the outpouring of Flyers fans. We're seeing, you know, a really emotional Claude Giroux as well. What do you make of this entire phenomenon of Giroux in this slow motion breakup with the Flyers?
It is kind of weird, right? Like, we don't normally see it play out like this, but here you go. Here you got a player here, and it's one that I'll tell you is, from playing against him, just an absolute gamer. Like, this guy is a gamer. Like, and he competes hard, and he's probably going to get his number retired as a Flyer, I would think, you know. And 1,000 games with one team is nothing to, you know, that's no slouch. That's some serious commitment to the organization, the organization to the player. So, but yeah, you're right. It's kind of weird how it is. And I was from a very good source with the Flyers, was told that I was like, what's it going to take to get Claude Giroux? And the answer I got was, look to the Rick Nash trade. The Rick Nash trade is what the Flyers are looking for, to the Bruins, the Rick Nash trade. And I'm like, whoa, okay, that's pretty substantial. That was a first. That was Ryan Lindgren, although that was probably before Ryan Lindgren was a top four defenseman. He's probably like more of a B prospect at that time. But it was a first, him, Spooner, and Valesky. And I'm like, well, that's a big pull. So I guess my point is that the idea is clearly to get as much as you can in any trade, but you're really rolling the dice here by like having them play this to get the 1,000 games. So I think it's very respectful that both, that Claude Giroux wants to get that in the Flyers jersey. And it's also very respectful that the Flyers are willing to kind of take that chance. I mean, you never know what can happen. So it's a tricky spot, but I love it. I think it's going to be great. I can't wait to watch the ceremony or just to hear him talk about playing 1,000 games. But yeah, we're seeing the other things happening with Owen Tippett being sat out and the minors here looking like there's a trade in place for Florida. So we'll see what happens.
Before I let you go, we're going to hear from Tanner Jeannot. This conversation that Elliot and I had a couple of days ago with the Nashville Predators winger. I love him. There's a lot of throwback there. And considering the nature of our conversation today, Mike, I'm guessing you're a fan of Tanner Jeannot.
I love Tanner Jeannot. I love his story, undrafted, yes. what he's doing with his team. And anybody I talk to around that Nashville organization, that third line, it's been their identity line. They've been everything. I mean, they have great stories going on there. Matthew Shane's been unbelievable. Yussi Saros, Roman Josi. I mean, they've got a lot of great stories. But Tanner Jeannot's one where I was at the Koivu jersey retirement night and saw them play against Nashville the other night. And Tanner Jeannot was skating off the ice. I think it was in the second period. And, you know, when you have the second period going back to your bench, you got to kind of cross paths. And a lot of times you guys bump into each other. And I think it was Jordan Greenway kind of bumped into him. And Tanner Jeannot has like this, there's no fuse. Like the fuse is, you know, you're not supposed to light things like that. You're supposed to throw those out because the fuse is so short, right? He gets bumped into and immediately just starts challenging and I'm thinking to myself, he's got 19 goals. He can play. He doesn't, but his ability to just not take any crap from anybody, that's their identity. And that's coming from a rookie. And I know that when you have a young guy on your team that's fearless of any circumstance in the NHL, and he's also productive, that makes everybody on your team just a little more confident. So he's an awesome story. I'd love to chat with that guy someday and just to hear his mindset, because I love the way he approaches the game. And he's a hell of a player, too.
Skill and an old school mentality. I love it. Rupert, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for stopping by. I didn't know how we got into so many hockey fight stories, but they were fun, man. That was a real good time.
We'll have to have an agreement next time. I could talk to you all day about that kind of the old war story. So next time we'll say, all right, we got to flip that switch off for a few minutes and talk about the league. But I enjoyed it, buddy. Nah. Thank you.
I love it. Thanks so much. Mike Rupp from the NHL Network. And no surprise, considering how he played, he's a fan of Tanner Jeannot. Rupper referenced the third line of the Nashville Predators. That's that is Tanner Jeannot with Colton Sissons and Yakov Trenin. At times, the best third line. Sorry. Florida Panthers, led by Anton Lundell, the best third line in all of hockey. Yeah, Minnesota's got a good one, too. Here's Tanner Jeannot from 32 Thoughts Podcast in conversation with yours truly and Elliot Friedman that just got released yesterday. Enjoy.
One of my favorite players of recent vintage in the NHL was John Madden. And John Madden played at the University of Michigan, and there was a story, and I don't really think anybody likes talking about it, Tanner, but where John Madden and Red Berenson's relationship kind of fell apart for a while because Red Berenson told him, you know, you're probably not going to play in the NHL and you should think about something else. And Madden took that very personally. Did anyone ever have that kind of a conversation with you where they said, you know, hey, Tanner, this might not work out or anything like that?
I wouldn't say that it was straight to my face where people would say that. It was more so people kind of saying, well, what's your backup plan and things like that. And obviously, like I said, until I signed my NHL contract, I wasn't sure if I was going to play, you know, professional hockey or whatnot. So, you know, I did have a backup plan. If I didn't sign a contract, I was going to go play, you know, CIS and go to school. So, you know, it was more so things like that rather than someone sitting me down and saying, you're not going to make it. What else are you going to do? But, I feel like that's a lot of players and a lot of pro athletes go through that, I think. And that's a big part of being a pro athlete, is that kind of mental toughness to get over mental obstacles like that. So what my dad told me all the time when I was, you know, younger, and he still tells me today, is to just control what you can control. So that's what I wake up trying to do every day, is try not to think about the things that you can't control, whether it's, you know, back then it was not getting drafted and not, you know, not being scouted or things like that. All you can control is your work ethic and what you do away from all the noise and everything else, and what's going to prepare you for, you know, the big moments. So that's kind of what I like to think about.
Okay, let me follow up on that with this question then. If you only focus on the things you can control, does that mean you never have a look at what Lucas Raymond or Dawson Mercer or Trevor Zegras or Michael Bunting are doing?
Well, you see highlights and things like that, but I like to use it as motivation. You know, if you know, other guys are succeeding, I think, you know, it's good for them. You know, everyone's trying to succeed. So if they're doing it, good for them. But I want to do it just as good or better. You know, that's what sport is all about. You want to play against the best and you want to be the best. So you can't be against the best if you're not playing against the best. So seeing guys have success is good, but it kind of just sets a fire under you and you want to do just as good.
One of the other stories that Poile told was that you were not thrilled with going down to the ECHL. And he tried to explain it as, we think this will be better for you, but you weren't really too interested in the explanation. How did that conversation go?
Yeah, well, no player's ever excited to be sent down. You know, it was just a situation where the year before I was a rookie and I was, you know, I was starting to play pretty well in my mind when I got injured, and then I got injured and I didn't really have a chance to come back. So in my mind, coming back for my second year, it was go time and it was ready. I was going to show them who I was and how I was going to, the type of player I was going to be for them. And then it just felt like my feet were getting taken out from under me right off the bat. But that's part of the mental toughness you have to have too. I had to change from that mindset to seeing it as another challenge and, you know, just doing what I could do in the situation that I was in. And that was just trying to play the best I could in the East Coast. And then that got me back to the American League, and then continuing to do the same thing until I made my ultimate goal of making the NHL. So yeah, it was a tough conversation for sure. I'm sure a lot of other guys have had similar conversations to that, but it's just all about your mindset that you got to take out of there. And sometimes it takes time. You're going to be pissed off sometimes, but you just got to fix that mindset as best you can and as quick as you can.
It's a very brave thing, Tanner, for a young player to give his GM an honest answer sometimes. Did any of you, part of you, walk out after that and say, yeah, I'm not sure that was the smartest thing I ever could have done?
Well, I don't think I was disrespectful in any way. You know, maybe I was wearing my heart on my sleeve a little bit, but
yeah,
that's the type of person I am. I want to do the best that I can all the time. So I ended up just taking it as a challenge, like they were challenging me to continue to improve. So, and I'm here now, so maybe it was the right call at the time, you know, like it did set that fire underneath me. So, you know, I don't regret anything. It was a good experience. It got, it gave me just that extra experience to draw from, I guess. And now I can use that in the future. And I know that I don't want to ever have that conversation again. So that's, I don't want to ever get sent down again. So I just want to keep going and keep playing well.
Your line is a really interesting one. I've talked plenty about the makeup of this line and the players on this line. And, you know, there's a couple of things that stand out from this season. Yakov Trenin, I mean, full marks to him. But when I watch him challenging Zdeno Chara, I always say to myself, man, this guy is tough. This guy has a lot of guts. But, you know, one of the coolest things I've seen your centerman Colton Sissons do was a game against the Florida Panthers. And I think you know where I'm going with this one. I can't recall the last time I saw someone go perfect at the dot
Yeah.
And you guys had a game against Florida where he went 16 for 16. Like normally on the faceoff percentage, when you see someone's like at 100%, they won like two draws.
Yeah.
But he goes 16 for 16 at the draw. I'm curious, one, how aware are you guys of that as he's going through it? And two, as the game goes on, do you treat it like players treat pitchers when they have a no-hitter going, that you just don't talk to them? You don't mention anything about the faceoff because you don't want to jinx it?
Yeah, well, you're definitely aware of it, and that was an incredible game for him. That was awesome, and he's been good all year. Like he's an elite centerman for sure. Like, you know, we're starting off with the puck definitely more times than when we're not, so that's a huge plus for our line just having him in the middle there. But yeah, that game. So we were aware just by how many times we would have the puck and in possession right off the bat. So that's how you're aware of it. And then, well, definitely me, I didn't say anything about it, but I don't know about Trenny, but you just try to let him do his thing. You know, like that's what we always do. He knows what he's doing in the center. Just let him do his thing. I'm not going to give him any advice. He knows what he's doing. So just try to let him keep the hot streak going. And yeah, he did great. It was awesome.
34 points so far this season for Tanner Jeannot, and 19 goals. He is third in rookie goals. He's tied with Lucas Raymond for 19. Michael Bunting has 20. He's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th in rookie points, trailing only Dawson Mercer, Anton Lindell, Moritz Seider, Trevor Zegras, Lucas Raymond, and Michael Bunting. He's had a heck of a rookie season for the Nashville Predators, wearing number 84. And that's the kind of player, you know, you go all the way back to the beginning of the Nashville Predators, new franchise, right? They always love was Cote, right? In the first season, always loved tough, tough hockey players, whether it was, you know, Darcy Hordachuk, for example. I'm not comparing Jeannot to Hordachuk or to Cote. Those are different styles of players. But Hordachuk, there was that one season where he had the perfect fighter's season. He had 60 penalty minutes in 1 year for Nashville and 12 fighting majors. Not a single minor penalty the whole season for Darcy Hordachuk. Every single minute was a fighting major. They've always appreciated tough players in Nashville. They love tough players, and that's why this guy has become a cult favorite around Preds camp. Thanks to Tanner Jeannot for stopping by the 32 Thoughts podcast the other day. That entire pod available now wherever you get your podcasts. When we come back, we'll talk about the Florida Panthers. Very much a team of interest, picking up Ben Chiarot, and as we suspect, Claude Giroux could be on the horizon as well. George Richards of Florida Hockey Now joins me in moments as the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet radio network.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, welcome back to the program. Thanks for hanging in there with me today. Busy day around the NHL. Busy day around women's hockey as well. And a busy day around Claude Giroux. And I want to talk about the impending Giroux deal and the Ben Chiarot deal here with George Richards. Really quickly, though, Charlie O'Connor. This is an interesting tweet. Something I've got to always remind myself of as well as I continue to age through hockey. Charlie O'Connor covers the Philadelphia Flyers for The Athletic. He tweeted this about 10 minutes ago. The thing that I keep coming back to today about Claude Giroux is that for an entire generation of hockey fans in Philly, basically anyone in their mid-20s and maybe even up to their early 30s, Giroux is Philadelphia Flyers hockey. This truly feels like the culmination of an era. Tonight, Claude Giroux skates in game number 1,000. How many shifts does he skate? I don't know. But afterwards, we all know what's coming, a trade. And there'll be a nice celebration before the game, which is a great touch by the Philadelphia Flyers, celebrating Claude Giroux on game number 1,000. And everyone has the Florida Panthers circled on this one, right? George Richards from Florida Hockey Now joins me now. George, are you one of the people as well that has the Florida Panthers circled for Claude Giroux?
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely is intriguing, right? And it sounds like this is where Claude wants to go. He wants to come to the Florida Panthers, or at least that's the word out on the street. I don't know, you know, if the Panthers have enough. I mean, Philadelphia's probably not going to get what they'd hoped for for Claude just because he holds all the cards. He's going to decide where he wants to go, and that limits the market, right? So it's not a free-for-all. You're not going to get, you know, Philadelphia's just not going to get what they should think they should get. And, you know, we'll have to see what happens. It's going to take some maneuvering for the Panthers to be able to do it. They're right up against the cap, but, you know, Montreal, you know, eating half of that contract yesterday really helps.
You know, you wonder too if it's not going to be Florida. Is it Colorado? You know, they're clearing the decks to try to make some big moves as well. Boston, we expect at a certain point this weekend to make their move or make their moves as well. You know, one of the things that I wonder about when it comes to Florida, and listen, I wondered about this with the Calgary Flames, and then Brad Treliving pulled off the Cali Yarncroke deal yesterday. You know, do they need this? Like, do you think that, like, listen, any team is going to be better with Claude Giroux on it. I get that. Right now, it seems as if chemistry is fantastic with this team. Sometimes you just look at a team and you say, this team doesn't need a trade as much as it just needs to keep everybody healthy and keep the hospital bracelet off. Do the Florida Panthers need Claude Giroux?
Well, it would definitely be a luxury, right? I mean, the Panthers are the highest scoring team in the National Hockey League. What they needed was a defenseman. They got that yesterday. That's what they needed. That's what they were saving that first-round draft pick for. That went to Montreal. Now everything else you're just tweaking, right? But, I mean, what a luxury to have. If you could put Claude Giroux up on that Florida Panthers top line with Carter Verhaeghe or Anthony DeClaire and Sasha Barkov, That's pretty tight, because Florida right now rolling four lines. They've got scoring all over the ice, and you know that would just be, you know, another cherry on the sundae.
You know, George, was there one moment in this Panthers season where you realized this? Listen, this is coming off a really successful campaign last season, a fun series against the Tampa Bay Lightning, where unfortunately for the Cats they bowed out. But was there one moment this season that you looked at, George, and said, "Okay, now I'm comfortable saying the Cats are legit, and this is a legit Stanley Cup contender"?
Yeah, I think it was right after that Christmas break when Florida went through the COVID stuff before Christmas and had a couple games postponed, just like every team did. But when they came out of that break and they were completely healthy and they just started coming at you with waves and waves, and it was game after game, it wasn't, and shift after shift, you're like, this team is legitimately good. I mean, they are just strong everywhere. You know, and it's not just the scoring seven goals, or, you know, and they did that a lot. But they can also play some defense. They've got decent goaltending. They've got a little bit of everything. They can score seven goals on you. They can brawl with you if you want to. They play tough. They can play tight. This team looks really, really good. And, you know, again, a very close-knit group. This is a good team. They're not just, you know, one or two stars. You look at the Florida Panthers, they can beat you in any variety of ways.
Mm-hmm. And they've got, like, you're bang on. Like, you go right down the list, like, at every single position. You know, they have, you know, one of the best players in the league in Alexander Barkov. Throw Jonathan Huberdeau into that combination as well. Mackenzie Weegar and Aaron Ekblad, certainly Ekblad. And I do believe Weegar was on the long roster for Team Canada for Beijing. You add Ben Sherratt, and all of a sudden, you know, you look at, you know, your goaltending duo of Bobrovsky, and like, it's a really nice team. And, you know, Anton Lundell popping, and Mason Marchment out of nowhere with 34 points. But the one guy that I want to get your thoughts on here is Sam Reinhart. And, you know, Sam Reinhart, we all know the trade from the Buffalo Sabres. You know, I look at Sam, I remember the St. Louis Blues were chasing Reinhart. I remember at the draft, there were all kinds of stories that, you know, San Jose was really heavy trying to get Sam Reinhart as well. What has he meant to this Florida Panthers team? I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, I was just waiting for that name to drop. I mean, because that's the one that kind of gets forgotten, is Sam Reinhart, because he's playing on Florida's third line. And that's just a testament that not only how deep the Panthers are, but how well-adjusted Sam Reinhart is. Andrew Burnett says he's one of the smartest hockey players he's ever dealt with. You know, we know Andrew Burnett's been around a while, around the NHL. he's also got Sasha Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau on his team. So that's quite a compliment to Sam Reinhart. But he has just been absolutely more than what the Panthers had hoped for. I think you look at the way he ended last season in Buffalo on an absolute tear. You know, when they moved him to center, he put up a lot of goals and stuff. But just his hockey sense, the way he plays, you know, the 200-foot game, and any time he's around the net, something usually happens. So he's been an absolute fantastic addition, and for a fairly cheap price. I mean, Florida did give up a number one and Devin Levy, but you would think that they'd do that again in a heartbeat.
That kid's so good at Northeastern, though. He's been fantastic. I know you got to get Reinhart. You got to give up. I think Buffalo is trying to get Ville Husso away from St. Louis, and that wasn't happening. And you know they went to Florida to get the goaltend, and he's been fantastic for. Anyway, Mason Marchman as well. That one I can remember in Toronto as well. And the hue and cry was we're trying to fix the skating. We're trying to fix the skate. What happened here? How did Mason Marchman pop like this?
Well, he's definitely a late bloomer, and Toronto knew that. I mean, he didn't start playing hockey till he was like 11 years old or something like that. So, yeah, when you're looking at fixing the skating, a lot of that's just, you know, repetition and all that. But, listen, last year, Florida brought him in at the end of the 2020 season, just before COVID hit. He was playing in the AHL. Then he got to work with the Panthers during the bubble practices and all that. But last year, he really kind of broke up. Joel Quenneville loved the guy. And out of nowhere, he went from, you know, being a scratch guy or a fourth line here and there guy to playing on the first line with Sasha Barkov. That gave him a tremendous amount of confidence. What Joel Quenneville instilled in him, he knew he could play at this level. And he has just really taken off this season. You know, someone was asking me today, well, could the Panthers give him an extension? I think the Panthers would love to give him an extension. I don't think the Panthers can afford him. I mean, Mason Marchman's about to get paid, and I don't think the Panthers can afford him.
So is this, like, I don't want to say it's like this year and then it all blows up or anything like that. Like, this, there's still a lot of players on a lot. But does it not feel like Florida understands, like, this is, and they may have more as well, but this is the big year to load up and go for it?
Yeah, and I think anybody in hockey would tell you the same. You never know when that window, you know, that window, it opens. It's such a small opening. You've got to go for it when you've got the team like they do. This is the last year they're going to have Sasha Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau on those very team-friendly contracts. Next year, you've got $6 million coming off the cap because of the Keith Yandle buyout. So they're going to have to make some moves this offseason, but they're not worrying about that right now. What they're worrying about is today. And this team is loaded, and they're loading it up, and they're going to go as far as they can with it. They'll worry about tomorrow. And, this definitely has a feel of we got to get this thing done because, again, this is Florida. These are the Panthers. They haven't won a playoff round since 1996. That's a long time. They need a deep run more than anybody in this league. And that includes Toronto.
Bring back Doug McLean and the Rats. Here we go.
Brad, Dougie's always welcome in Sunrise. No doubt about that.
At times, I mean, there have been some situations. What's the market done with this? How are the fans reacting here in Sunrise?
Well, you know, it's South Florida. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, this is definitely a non-traditional market. But it's not just the hockey team that knows that. Right now, the only team that draws consistently down here are the Miami Heat, and that includes the Dolphins, the Hurricanes. We've seen the Marlins. So this is just a very tough market, but it's a market that loves a winner. People are starting to pile on the bandwagon. Again, this is a franchise that hasn't won a playoff series in 26 years. There's been a lot of desert here in the tropics when it comes to the Panthers. So people, they've been pretty good these last 2 years. I think people are buying in, and they're really starting to enjoy it. The TV ratings are going up. The attendance is going up. We all know the problems the Panthers have with location and the size of that arena. But when that place gets full, even when it's 14,000, it's a pretty loud building. So they're enjoying it.
Before I let you go here, when you look at the Panthers and look at trade deadline, and one move's already been made, and that's Ben Chiarot, we believe Claude Giroux as well, at least Florida being the clubhouse leader here. Do you know if they're out on Jacob Chychrun at this point?
I mean, I don't think they have enough to make a deal with Arizona, right? I mean, Arizona wants the sun and the moon for Jacob Chychrun, and that's fine. I've been saying this for months. The Jacob Chychrun deal for Arizona really makes sense in the summertime. It's a draft day trade. They're not going to get what they want during the deadline. And now that he's got the ankle injury and he's hurt, maybe Florida can circle back and maybe be able to work some things out. But right now they just don't have the capital to make that deal.
Gotcha. George, always a pleasure. Listen, man, it's a fun run so far. Glad you're there to document it. Thanks as always for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Be good, man.
George Richards from Florida Hockey Now. Yesterday, the Florida Panthers acquiring Ben Chiarot from the Montreal Canadiens. One move by Bill Zito, general manager of the Florida Panthers. We believe another one is on the horizon. That would be Claude Giroux, who tonight skates in game number 1,000 for the Philadelphia Flyers. And afterwards, question marks. Let's bring in Matt Marchese here for a couple of moments, our producer. That was a jam-packed show. There's a lot of things on there. What stood out from you? And I say that knowing full well you're going to say the hockey fight stories with Mike Rupp, true or false?
Oh, true, 100%. Like, that was I'm telling you, when he was explaining playing on a line between Jim McKenzie and Turner Stevenson, the thought going through my head is, firstly, that they told them, go stir up whatever you want. We got you. Could you imagine how big he would play? Like, I feel like I would feel big playing on that line with those two guys. Like, no shrinking violets there.
Hang on a second. Jim McKenzie is like the one guy from that era that nobody talks about, but he may have been the baddest of all those dudes. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody wanted to go near Jim McKenzie.
They didn't. And that's why, like, even Turner Stevenson was tough too. Oh. And the thought of playing with those guys, because those guys in today's game, just they're not here. We don't have players like that, generally speaking. But the fact that two of them played on the same line with a guy who was a former first round pick is incredible. Sure. It's so sure good.
Sure was. I'm really looking forward to this Claude Giroux ceremony tonight. I've grown to really, really understand over the last few years just how much that player means to that team and means to those fans as well. You know, I mentioned the slow motion breakup, and that's what it feels like now. You know, this is going to be their last chance to cheer on, we believe, their last chance to cheer on Claude Giroux. I'm really looking forward to a real big emotional outpouring of the fans in Philadelphia tonight, Maddie.
Yeah, they won't boo Santa Claus, so it'll be nice that they'll treat an athlete with respect in Philadelphia. But no,
They love their own, bud. They love them.
They do, and that's why I think there's going to be a real appreciation for what Claude Giroux has done for that organization. You know, when you look at the player, he's going to really excel wherever he goes, and somebody's going to get a real good player for the playoff push here.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Matt Marchese. Thanks to Lance Kennedy as well, our technical operator. You just heard from George Richards from Florida Hockey Now. Previous, you heard from Mike Rupp from the NHL Network, Brad Treliving. A big thanks to the Calgary Flames general manager for stopping by, and Flames Media Relations for making him available. And as always, Elliot came on to bore us off the top of the program. It's good. Listen, it's going to be an action-packed day around the NHL tonight. It's not just all about Claude Giroux, but that is one of the big stories. There are some huge games on the board tonight, whether it's the Penguins and the Blues. Vegas Golden Knights, man, playing the Florida Panthers. That's a tough challenge, and that's your late one. Stay up for the Cats and the Knights. Back tomorrow, noon, Eastern, 9 Pacific.